Hi, I'm Kristen.
And I'm her little brother, William.
We're from the podcast Guide to the Unknown, where we only talk about scary stuff and have a good time doing it.
Come join the scary fun, everyone.
Wherever you get your podcasts, you'll find Guide to the Unknown.
Happy Halloween, trick-or-treaters, dreamers, campers, and suspects. What you're about to hear is a clip from our Patreon-exclusive commentary track on Rick Rosenthal, John Carpenter, and Deborah Hill's Halloween 2. How do you hear the full thing? Become a member of our Patreon, The Rewind. You can find a link in the description of this episode, or you can visit patreon.com/halloweeniespod. Hope to see you there so we can give you one more scare.
I mean, I feel like as a kid, Universal probably put out my favorite movies. I feel like Nowadays I'm more of a subscriber of WB. I think like Warner Brothers, I just love what they allow for the auteurs out there. But I don't know. It's weird because like if you think about Universal and just like the crew and the talent that would work with Carpenter and then where the rest of them would go, it feels like this was like 81's Halloween 2, this one, was like a conduit for a lot of the crew to get into Universal, like for the 80s. Because then you get like Dean Cundey working with Spielberg and Zemeckis and a lot of other folks. I don't know. It just kind of feels like this is like the beginning of an era here.
Yeah, absolutely. I would love it if Cundey would just come back and just light it all. Just do it all. I mean, this look is just unparalleled in my opinion. And of course, I think this is one of the only movies that I know that genuinely opens with the ending of the previous film. Like full on opens with it.
Well,
albeit a couple of minor changes.
Yeah, the Friday the 13th films. Yeah.
Karate Kid Part 2.
You know what? You're right. But this is long. This is a long opening. We are like really showing you the end.
Well, this is probably why they had to have all new on the movie poster, because people probably rolled in here and were like, I've seen this shit before. I know where this one goes.
Could you imagine if you like left though? Like, this is the ending of the first one. Screw it. And then they left. It's just like, wait, no, it's the beginning of the movie, though. Just stick around.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Lori's removing the mask from Michael Myers.
Oh, yeah.
I thought she never did that. I thought that's
oh,
why
really?
So I thought that's why it's
oh,
such a
no.
big deal in Halloween Kills, the upcoming
Man,
film from
be,
Universal
is,
and Blumhouse.
This is going to be great, Mike, because you haven't seen this in God knows when, and you're going to be like,
I knew that. That
very surprised.
Do you think
he shoots him 7 times there too?
He does. Yeah, he messes up the shoot count there.
Well, you know, if you shoot the boogeyman multiple times and then he gone, when you don't remember how many times you shot the gun.
You know,
it's also a 6-shooter, so the 7 shots doesn't quite. Maybe there's a sniper on the, across the way.
Well, it's the team of police that are out front, as you may have seen in one of the stills from the upcoming Blumhouse Universal release, Halloween Kills.
Oh yeah, I can't wait for that.
Slick editing here, though. Like
it is,
like you said.
Yeah.
If there's one thing I've always enjoyed about this movie is that it feels like you could edit this into one movie. The scope, the 235, the one scope, to the color palette, it all works together.
Well, it's like they didn't wait long. I mean, 3 years is a long time when you think about slasher sequels, but like it was still just enough time where like things still look the same. Like they didn't change the streets too much. They still shot in Pasadena. Like one of my biggest wrinkles in any sequels, especially growing up, is A, when they replace actors, I hated it, especially in Batman, it just drove me nuts. And then B is when you just change locations. Like even Zombies remakes, like they change locations.
You know,
like
I don't know if you know this, but this guy is actually Bucky from Halloween 4. As
is it really?
Because he's had enough of this Halloween shit.
Oh. I'm so fucking gullible.
I love that opening when he says,
guys, nothing I'm
going to
say is true. Nothing I'm going to say is true for this whole thing.
I fell for it, Vanderbilt. I fell for it. But, you know, fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice.
My man!
Dino!
You got to get more blood in these slasher movies. First one is scary, but it's not gory. It's not what the kids want.
I like to think Dino was like, We're going to cut the credits right after Donald's line there. That was solid.
You know, quick bit of trivia about these credits. Now, this one is true. I ain't bullshit.
Oh God. Okay, yeah, you're going to have to say that.
The main title sequence was designed by Jamie Short of Shortworks LTD. Now, Jamie didn't have a big career in Hollywood, but did work on visual effects for Airplane, The Blues Brothers, and Star Wars.
Oh.
The first one?
The original.
Or all of them.
The only fucking Star Wars. Just like last year on the commentary for Halloween, I implied
the only Halloween.
Only one fucking Halloween movie. And the poster for this one was designed by Bob Gleason, who also designed a poster for Halloween, the original one, and Game of Death, Bruce Lee's final film. But I couldn't find anything else that he did.
Now, so they really brought back everyone, like even down to the poster. Really, I never knew that. That's awesome.
Yeah, I had a hard time finding out who designed that thing. But according to all of my research, it was Bob Gleason.
Well, also, so the original poster, is that the one with the pumpkin and the skeleton in it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With the hand, with the knife. No.
Well, the original one the first one.
I'm telling this for
two.
Oh,
for this one, the pumpkin with the skull. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great poster. I've seen that Halloween mask out there. Someone's created that, which I think is really cool. Because that is obviously not featured at all in this actual film.
Sort of right here, though.
Well, yeah, but it's not like I just like that. I mean, that it is like spot on that version on the poster. I think the mask is. It's pretty cool looking.
Now, do you guys think you would have stayed home to watch Halloween on NBC that night, as Gene Siskel suggested you do in his review of this that ran on October 30th, 1981, or would you have gone to see Halloween 2?
Oh, go to see Halloween 2. In a heartbeat.
Now, this is, you know, kind of, you might not have a VCR yet, because this is 1981.
True. I'd say, here's the thing. I feel like the Star Wars movies really would have prepared me for, like, the sequelitis that would come. Because, like, 1980 kicks off with, you know, Empire Strikes Back. That's pretty big. Like, I mean, that's a big wait. Those 3 years. It's 3 year wait for this. I feel like given the impact that Empire Strikes Back would have had on me if I had just seen it in 1980, and they say, oh, Halloween 2 is coming out, this huge movie you loved also, you know, around roughly the same time as A New Hope.
And if you liked Empire Strikes Back, you're going to love the twist in this one too.
Exactly, right? And so, like, I feel like I would have been, the hype would have just been, like, unbelievable for me going into this.
Do you feel that they felt compelled to have a twist like that?
Absolutely. In fact,
because of that film?
I can't find it. But there was an interview with David Shaw, a horror writer. He wrote Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3, I believe, and did a treatment for Nightmare on Elm Street 5. And he was talking, I believe he was talking to somebody, or maybe it was somebody else, was talking about a treatment they had for Texas Chainsaw Massacre right around this time, a sequel, rather, to Texas Chainsaw Massacre, that revealed the final girl from that one was related to the Leatherface, to the Sawyer family. And in this interview that I remember reading, he said it was because of fucking Empire Strikes Back. No, but that's no bullshit. That one's true.
I mean, he wrote it. Sorry, go for it.
I think there's no greater horror than finding out, you know, that you're related to the evil, right? So I do feel like I understand.
Oh, yeah. It's a great twist. And
the want to maybe work that in to a franchise, but
it's one of the things I don't hate about this one. You know, different to Mike Rothman's opinion. Yeah. I don't mind the brother sister twist. It's like, fine, it's cool.
Well, I don't either necessarily, but it's hard to continue with these films. Oh. And I think that's why they did what they did with Halloween 3 initially. It just, at that point, people were too hungry for the shape.
There's Lucille Benson, her final film role.
Oh, really?
Oh, man.
Also appears
in Calder.
I like that shot.
That's a great shot.
Time to take a sip, y'all.
Yeah, a little bit of Nightmare or Night of Living
Nightmare
Dead.
Of the Living Dead.
Nightmare of the Living Dead.
One of my favorite classic independent films.
God, I love that movie so much. Probably I think it's a top five film of all time for me.
It's excellent.
My problem with the twist is that it's just like the first mark against the original one. Like, if you think of the original one as like a block of ice, like every sequel just keeps chipping and chipping away with it, and it becomes just water now. Like, the first one is so scary because he just is going after anyone, you know, and he could be anywhere at the end
of
the one.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it can be anybody.
And he still could be this. Like, I mean, yeah. You look at this, like my brother and I were talking about this a lot of, because he was, I think he listened to the Crack podcast a lot, like a few years ago. And the guys on there talked a lot about like the insistency on like, you know, familiarity with sequels. Whereas like sequels by themselves, like should try to, you know, explore new places. Like all you really needed to do with this sequel. And I, you know, I don't know if we really got to talk about this in the Halloween 2 episode. It's been 4 years now, but like, all you really needed to do is just have Loomis and Brackett as this, or like Loomis at, like and Hunt as the center. Like you didn't need Laurie anymore. Like you, she could have easily just gone to the hospital. You go and follow him stalking other people in you know, in Haddonfield, and it would have worked. But the problem is also is that, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis is probably, you know, she's a.
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser-known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.
Every town has its dark history. Hometown Ghost Stories is a paranormal podcast that goes town to town all across the globe, exploring the world's most haunted places, tapping into the dusty archives and the darkest corners to bring you the most terrifying stories of real people and their harrowing experiences. Hometown Ghost Stories dives into the history of haunted locations and investigates why and how these places earned their terrifying reputation. Rob, Dave, and Jesse go live every Tuesday night after an uninterrupted documentary-style breakdown on the case, followed by an open discussion with live viewers. Subscribe today to listen to Hometown Ghost Stories on your preferred podcast platform or watch the video version on YouTube and now Spotify. Head on over to the Bloody FM Podcast Network and check out Hometown Ghost Stories, if you're brave enough.